You're listening to After All Things, WSHU's daily news and culture update from the Long Island Sound region. The Supreme Court says the Sackler family is not immune from opioid civil lawsuits. Four Connecticut school districts face a complaint over special education. A former Suffolk official defends the county's months-long cyber attack response. And the latest from WSHU's Off the Path, those stories and more are ahead. I'm Sabrina Garone. Connecticut Attorney General William Tong has commended the U.S. Supreme Court decision that the Sackler family, who own Purdue Pharma in Stamford, can't use the drug company's bankruptcy to settle opioid lawsuits. WSHU's Ebong Udama has more.
Tong says the High Court's decision is a rebuke of the attempt by the Sackler family to abuse the U.S. bankruptcy code.
The Supreme Court got it right. Billionaire wrongdoers should not be allowed to shield blood money in bankruptcy court.
Connecticut, eight other states, and the U.S. Justice Department had challenged the Purdue Pharma bankruptcy order. Tong argues it allowed the fraudulent transfer of hundreds of millions of dollars from Purdue Pharma to the Sacklers to shield the family's wealth from a $4.3 billion settlement to states, municipalities, and plaintiffs who had sued the OxyContin manufacturer.
In practical terms, this sends us back to bankruptcy court, where I expect we'll re-enter mediation and settlement negotiations.
In 2021, a lower federal court vacated the bankruptcy court's order, clearing the way for Connecticut and the other dissenting states to reach a $6 billion settlement with the Sacklers and Purdue. Ebong Udama, WSH News.
Four school districts in Connecticut face a federal civil rights complaint concerning inadequate treatment of students in special education programs. WSHU's Ada Uzenlar reports.
Those districts are Bridgeport, Waterbury, Hartford, and Stratford. The State Office of the Child Advocate and nonprofit Disability Rights Connecticut filed the case together on the grounds that the districts were providing the students with subpar education and often forcing them into seclusion or restraint. 1,200 cases in 1 year. The complaint stems from a 2-year-long investigation into the districts, which were enrolling their special education students in private programs run by High Road Schools. That investigation found that both the districts working with High Road Schools and the state didn't adequately monitor the students' education or well-being. The complaint to the Federal Department of Justice requests a formal investigation into the students' treatment. Ada Uzenlar, WSHU News.
A former Suffolk top official defended the Bellone administration's response to a cyber attack on county government systems in September 2022. The breach triggered a state of emergency that lasted well into last year. Former Chief Deputy Lisa Black, who led the response to the hack, testified in front of a legislative committee yesterday. Her attorney pushed back on questions from legislator Anthony Piccirillo about her computer being wiped before she left office in December.
Wouldn't the deletion and scrubbing of the operating system compromise the investigation and the recovery effort?
That would depend on what documents you're talking about. And again, it's not within the scope of the investigation that was vested by the legislature in this committee.
That's your opinion?
To investigate what led up to the cyber attack. She's not answering that question.
The witness refuses to answer the question. Let the record reflect.
The attack from 2022 knocked out county systems and websites for months, for which $16 million was approved to pay outside vendors to fix, according to Newsday. WSHU's Davis Donovan brings us the story of William Fly and how he became a feared pirate. It's part of the series Off the Path, and that's coming up after a message from our supporter.
Local support comes from Hartford Healthcare, the only health system in the Northeast, with all its hospitals receiving A grades for safety from the Leapfrog Group, the nation's leading independent safety watchdog group, HartfordHealthcare.org.
A Bristol police officer was justified in shooting the gunman who killed two other Bristol officers in an ambush attack in 2022. That's according to a final report of the incident from the Connecticut Inspector General. It details all the phases that led to the deaths of Police Lieutenant Dustin DeMonte and Sergeant Alex Hamsey. The Suffolk County Water Authority is asking customers to conserve water. They say water storage tanks are reaching low levels and residents are seeing low water pressure in their homes. They recommend reducing the watering of lawns to at most every other day. The fireworks show at Jones Beach State Park is back this 4th of July, and it's set to begin at 9:30. There's no additional charge for the fireworks. Regular park admission is $10 per vehicle. This year marks 95 years of Jones Beach State Park on Long Island's South Shore. Connecticut native Alyssa Nahar is headed to the Olympics with the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team. WSHU's Molly Ingram has more on her path from Bridgeport to Paris.
The 36-year-old is headed to her third Olympics with the team. She's been the team's primary goalkeeper since 2016. Nahar was born in Bridgeport and attended Christian Heritage School in Stratford. She played at Pennsylvania State and has been with the Chicago Red Stars in the National Women's Soccer League since 2016. She's already a two-time World Cup champion and an Olympic bronze medalist with the U.S. WNT. The team kicks off against Zambia on July 25th. Molly Ingram, WSHU News.
William Fly's pirate career was short, about a month, and his death in 1726 was brutal. His piracy began with a mutiny and ended with a gruesome display on an island in Boston Harbor that would serve as a warning to other pirates. WSHU's Davis Donovan begins the tale of William Fly with how he became a feared pirate. It's for the series Off the Path.
I'm on the tip of Deer Island, a little spit of land sticking out into Boston Harbor.
It's a brisk February day. It is very windy. We're looking into the chill waters of Boston Harbor.
Boston Harbor Island's National Park Ranger, Patrick Boyce.
And rising above the water is a very, very small, almost invisible island known as Nix's Mate. And it was famously a place where the ill-fated pirate William Fly was displayed after his execution in Boston in 1726.
If we were here when William Fly was being displayed out there, what would we have seen?
This body in a cage coated with tar. It's really, welcome to Boston. Don't engage in piracy because this could happen to you.
So just like this slowly rotting body?
Exactly.
It's a practice called gibbeting, and it was the fate of a few other well-known pirates, like Captain Kidd. But Captain Fly's gibbeting marked a historic turning point.
His fate kind of exemplifies the end of the golden age of piracy, a period of roughly 40 years where pirates really ran rampant throughout the Atlantic world. And Boston was a touchstone for a lot of them, a place to offload their ill-gotten goods.
Fly's career in piracy began after he became a shipmate on a slave vessel bound for Guinea. The ship was called the Elizabeth. The captain was John Green. And not surprisingly, someone wrote a ballad about Fly and handed it out around town after his hanging on printouts called broadsides.
William Fly was a pirate bold, but his birthplace is unknown, I've been told. All that is known, Captain Green shipped Fly as boatswain, but in that capacity, he didn't long remain.
William Fly leads a mutiny on the ship, the Elizabeth, that results in the death of the ship's captain and his first mate. Their bodies are chucked into the water, and the other mutineers decide to elect William Fly as their captain. They sew themselves a Jolly Roger.
You know, the black pirate flag with a skull and crossbones.
And rename their ship the Fame's Revenge. Now, instead of going to the west coast of Africa as originally planned, the now renamed Fame's Revenge goes on a bit of a rampage up the eastern seaboard.
Fly and his crew captured four or five ships along the way. He was really brutal with the captain of one of those ships, tied him to the rigging, gave him lashings, and then sank the ship. See, Fly and his crew weren't that interested in the ships. They wanted what was on board.
Tobacco, logwood, enslaved people, anything they could sell somewhere else. which is why they're coming to places like Boston. It's a place that will buy their ill-bought wares.
Every time he captured a ship, Fly forced the crew to serve him. It's called impressment. For example, he forced one guy named William Atkinson to be his navigator. Eventually, all those unwilling and probably unhappy sailors outnumbered Fly's original crew.
William Fly kind of falls for the oldest trick in the world. William Atkinson, he's looking through a spyglass. He says, "Oh, look, I see some sails on the horizon." And William Fly replies, "Well, I don't see anything." And Atkin says, "Well, you have to stand over here." Well, Fly does so, leaving all of his weapons unsecured, which are then seized by all the other impressed sailors who now make William Fly their prisoner.
The pirate is brought back to Boston to meet his fate. But first, one of the most famous men in colonial America takes a special interest in him. That's on the next Off the Path from WSHU Public Radio. I'm Davis Donovan.
Thank you for listening to After All Things, supported by Hartford Healthcare. For more news from Connecticut and Long Island, listen to WSHU on the radio, stream online at WSHU.org, or use the WSHU app. That's also where you can find more great podcasts from WSHU, like Off the Path. You'll also find Higher Ground, Long Story Short, Sunday Baroque Conversations, this podcast, of course, and many more. They're also available wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm Sabrina Garone. Have a great rest of your day. I'll talk to you tomorrow.